Welcome to the Financial Advisors Workshop, where Brian Castle, founder of Four Star Wealth in Chicago, interviews the most successful financial advisors in America to hear exactly how they grew their businesses to $100 million and beyond. Before we dive into the interview, please go to financialadvisorsworkshop.com and download your copy of our free guide on how to find ultra-high net worth clients. Let's start the show. Here's Brian.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Financial Advisors Workshop. This is the show where we interview financial advisors from all over the country, in some cases all over the world, people who are doing really good work in financial planning and financial advising with wealthy Americans and people outside of America. And we have one of those really interesting characters today. Tom, can you tell me how to pronounce your last name?
It's Zakistal.
Okay, Zakistal. And that's a Czech name, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good old Czech name. And in Czech, it actually means one who prepares. And it apparently, or so I've been told, it comes from like the 15th century when armies were on horseback and they sent a scout ahead of them to prepare the place where they were staying. So that guy was called Zakistal. And I was born in Prague in what was then Czechoslovakia.
Very nice. Very nice. And you were born there, but you were raised actually in Canada.
That's right. So we moved to Canada when I was 4 years old, and I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta, and I've lived in California now for the last 25 years.
Very good. So we had a little discussion prior to our taping of this, and you are the Chief Investment Officer at International Asset Management, a U.S. Registered Investment Advisor, and that all sounds very, very American. But it's not a very American-only business, is it? And you're all over the world. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. So I started this business in 2002 after a career as an engineer with a company called Schlumberger in the oil services business. I was an expat for them in many interesting places. And I liked the expat experience. I didn't like the engineering job so much. And so I ended up in California and worked for a couple of firms and then started this business in 2002, and what's special about our business is that 90% of our clients are Americans living abroad in some 30 plus countries now, and that's kind of unusual because most U.S. firms just don't want to deal with expats anymore, frankly.
Mm. Well, good. So tell everybody, our listeners, what do you consider to be an expat? Is it a foreigner living in America? Is it Americans living overseas?
So we think of expats as, and in our case, U.S. expats, so U.S. citizens living overseas. It's not necessarily people who have actually expatriated in the sense that they've given up citizenship. These people are typically still U.S. citizens, but they just live outside the U.S. on a permanent basis.
Okay. So you developed a business like that now, and how do you find these people? How do you find expats, Americans living overseas?
Well, now after 20 years of doing this, where, you know, the website's out there on the web, it comes up high in Google searches and so on. And so if somebody Googles a U.S. expat advisor, will probably come up. So a lot of the new business comes through the website, frankly. But we also sometimes do webinars like this or seminars in person in various parts of the world. A couple of years ago, we got a license in Europe. We have a sister company based out of Spain, so we can do marketing in Europe, and we've done quite a bit of that. We also receive referrals from clients, obviously, but also from U.S. expat tax advisors, so people who do U.S. taxation, but they actually live in various countries because Americans can never escape the tax ban, the U.S. tax ban.
Interesting. So you get these... You get these referrals from U.S. tax advisors who are outside the U.S.
Yeah, that's right. So these are people who have moved, probably a lot of them are Americans, but they've moved outside the U.S. and they've started a tax practice there catering to Americans living in whatever country they're in. And they generally also have some knowledge of local taxation, which is important because there are a lot of tax treaties out there, and if you're an American living somewhere like France, for example, you need to be aware of the tax treaty and the provisions of that, and and how your what you do with your U.S. taxes may affect French taxation, for example. So these are people who understand a bit about each of those, local taxation, but they specialize in the U.S. tax forms and so on.
Very interesting. So do you end up doing a lot of work with currencies?
Well, from an investment perspective, not so much, although recently we've put some money into the Japanese yen. But in terms of like currency transfers, we don't do that in-house, but we can certainly refer people. You know, a lot of people these days use Wise or something like Wise. It used to be called TransferWise for currency exchange and transfer. Also, we use Interactive Brokers as one of our custodian, and they have multi-currency accounts, and you get a good exchange rate within the accounts. So for taxable accounts, we can wire money in and out in multiple currencies and exchange it. So to that extent, we deal with currencies, but it isn't primarily what we do, I wouldn't say.
Okay. Interesting. Well, let's back up a second. How did you decide to get into this business? And then how did you pivot to dealing with expats?
Well, like I say, I was an expat myself working for Schlumberger. Didn't like the job, but liked the experience and the people I dealt with. So basically went through a career change. I made some money in the oil business. I started investing it. So I guess that's how I got started. And as I had some downtime in the jungles and the deserts of the world working for Schlumberger, I got an education to become a financial advisor. I ended up getting a CFA and a CFP credentials. And so that's kind of what started it. And also I saw a business niche that needed to be filled because very few U.S. firms specialize in financial services for expats. And yet there are 7 million U.S. expats out there. Other reasons for doing it are I like the complexity of it. There's a lot going on in the expat experience when it comes to taxation and estate planning on the financial planning side. And frankly, I like the clients. I like dealing with interesting people and people who moved overseas. They generally have a good story, and a lot of them have become my friends over the years. And I enjoy going to visit them. And every time I go visit someone, it's a tax write-off. So that's pretty nice for me as well, you know.
That works well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then it's a bit of a lifestyle decision as well. I can see myself maybe moving to Spain or somewhere else in a few years. So there's that aspect of it too.
So Tom, why do your clients move overseas? Like why do you end up having expats?
Usually it's either for love or money. So either they have a job that takes them overseas, or they have a love interest. You know, sometimes it's a spouse, or sometimes they're from another country originally themselves and they want to move back, or maybe they're following a significant other. So that's quite often the reason. Some people move overseas for the financial aspect. You know, it's a lot less expensive to live in places like Mexico or Ecuador or something like that. You can actually live off of U.S. Social Security in places like that, which you can't do in the States typically. For some people, it's the politics. You know, I also hear phrases like, well, I don't like where America is headed. So sometimes it's the political thing. Sometimes it's healthcare. A lot of places have a national healthcare system that you can latch into, and healthcare can be expensive in the States. So there are a lot of reasons for moving, but there are a lot of expat communities out there too. Like for example, just south of Guadalajara in Mexico, a place called Lake Chapala, there's 10,000 Americans, 10,000 retired Americans living around that lake, and it's the largest U.S. expat community outside of a major urban center. So there are these communities where you get to meet people, and you know, that's different. In the States, sometimes we don't even know our neighbors, but they're the people get close because they have something in common.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. And actually, you started your advisory business in Spain, didn't you?
Well, no, I started the Spain thing is quite recent. We just started a business there 2 years ago. So we have a European license in Spain. You can, in Europe, if you're licensed in one country, you can do what's called passporting to the other EU countries. And so we started that business 2 years ago I have a partner there in Sevilla. Yeah. And we did that mostly because, for a number of reasons. First of all, as a U.S. advisor, while we can have clients in Europe, we can't do any marketing in Europe. You have to be licensed in Europe to do marketing as an advisor there. And And secondly, you know, I can see the day where coming where maybe the EU regulators insist that people living in the EU only deal with advisors who are licensed there. So as continuity to our clients in Europe, we also set that up you know, so number of reasons for setting up in Spain, but the business is based in the San Francisco area, the US firm. And that's where I've been, I've been in California for 20 years since I started it. Yeah.
So what is different about providing advice to expats and people with foreign entanglements as compared to just American clients?
Well, from our perspective, you know, obviously you don't meet these people face to face very often. About half my clients, I've never met them face to face. So we end up doing a lot of Zoom calls. Almost nobody comes to the office. I think I've had two people this year come to the office. So you need to be able to work from anywhere. Everything we have is in the cloud. You also need to be concerned about regulations on advisors in other countries. You can't just go somewhere and start giving investment advice. You typically have to be licensed where you give investment advice. So you can't just go to Europe and do a seminar on investment advice trying to get clients unless you're licensed there. And then there are countries where if the client lives in that country, then you have to be licensed there. So Canada is a good example of that. We don't have any clients in Canada because we're not licensed there. But many other countries, you can have clients there as long as you're dealing from your office in the state. So you have to be aware of the regulations. And then there are also sometimes limitations on investment products. Like, for example, in Europe, there's a certain regulation where some of the U.S. custodians, you know, people don't have access to U.S. exchange-traded funds or mutual funds. So there are limitations on investment products sometimes. There are a limited number of U.S. brokerage firms we can use as custodians. And we may need to research local financial issues, especially around tax, because we don't want to do something like an IRA rollover or a Roth conversion, and then that might create a tax problem locally for these people because Roths aren't tax deferred accounts in those countries. So things like that come up as well.
Interesting. So some big challenges there.
Challenges makes it interesting though too.
I bet it does. Yeah. So you have about $85 million under management. Is that right at this point?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, great. What does it look like for that trajectory? Are you continuing to grow?
Yeah, we're going pretty quickly, actually. frankly, a lot of inquiries. And so yeah, I expect probably around 20% a year or something like that, you know, not counting the investment market growth and so on. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, good. So when you do manage money for expats, do you end up having to do currency hedges and things like that, or does everyone just kind of roll on whatever currency they're in?
Well, that's an interesting question. So we actually end up not doing a lot of currency hedging, but we do have a portfolio that's diversified internationally. So on the stock side, we generally like to be about 50-50, although lately, and by lately, I mean probably over the last 5-6 years, we've been mostly in the U.S. because the American markets have been outperforming. But yeah, we don't necessarily put on currency hedges ourselves, but we might invest in, say, an unhedged fund that deals in Europe or in India or something like that. We do have a few accounts that, for example, prefer to have their investments in euros, and we can accommodate that as well through Interactive Brokers. So in that sense, we can do some currency hedging. But, you know, an interesting thing also is that the U.S. dollar tends to strengthen versus other currencies during times of strife. So like in 2008 or whenever there's a big downturn, investors run to the safest thing out there, which is U.S. Treasury bonds. And so you get kind of a natural hedging effect if you think of your investments in a different currency, but you have some money in U.S. dollar investments because the dollar will tend to strengthen when the stock market goes down.
Yes. Very interesting. And you were involved with international asset management before. And in coming to chief investment manager, tell us about that journey. How did you become an investment manager as well as an advisor?
Well, International Asset Management is my current firm. I started it in 2002. And how did I become an investment advisor? Well, like I say, when I was with Schlumberger back in the day, I took some courses. I got the CFA and CFP and so on. And then I originally joined Merrill Lynch, actually, when I moved to California. And they were kind enough to get me a visa because I wasn't a U.S. citizen at the time. Now I am, but needed a visa. So they got me a visa and worked for them for a little bit. And then I worked for another firm in San Diego that dealt with expats. And then I started this business, International Asset Management, in 2002.
Nice. Now, you've also been involved locally. You've been the head of the San Francisco Planning Association. What happened there, and how has that helped you in your business?
Yeah, so I'm also a CFP certificate, and I was involved with, I live in the Bay Area. I've lived here for about, since 2007. And so I've always been involved with the Financial Planning Association, and eventually joined the board and became the president. This was about 6 or 7 years ago, and good organization. It's global, although mostly U.S., I would say. And there used to be a big global contingent. And so I ran that, it's a 1 year term and then you move on. I would recommend it for anybody who's a CFP certificate.
Nice. And then how was the CFA and CFP, how those have prepared you as well for what you're doing now?
Well, the CFA is a portfolio manager's credential. So it gives you a sense of how to manage investments. You know, it's a 3-year program. It's pretty tough. Half the people drop out each year. So I think it's worth having as a certification if you're actually going to manage money. The CFP is more on the financial planning side. So there we're talking about things like taxation and estate planning. And originally I did the CFP for myself because I moved here from Canada to the U.S. I didn't really understand the U.S. financial system. So I thought it might be a good idea to do it anyway. But it's helpful because a lot of the issues we deal with, the investment management side, I think you go back a bit as well. So you probably remember the days when everyone sold mutual funds and then so on and so forth. But nowadays it's becoming more and more financial planning oriented, a more comprehensive outlook. And so it's good to also be a CFP certificate and have those credentials, I think.
It does. Well, good. So everyone has a largest client. So tell us about your largest client and how you got your largest client.
Well, we have several largest clients, I guess. But the client that's probably, I would say, the closest to my heart, it was my first client when I joined the firm. In fact, he was the only client that came over from my former employer, the only client I came over, and he's still my client. He's been my client over 20 years. He's a gentleman who lives in France and used to work for a large U.S. international company, worked in different parts of the world. He used to run their European office, and then he retired and he bought sort of a retirement property in France that he built into sort of a hotel. And he's actually just in the process of selling that now because he's getting on a bit. And he ran that though for many years. And so, it's been an interesting journey with him. And I know his kids, we set up 529 plans. So he has about a dozen grandkids and set up 529 plans for all of them. It's been a great journey.
Nice. So you have a really interesting practice. And Tom, if you were thinking about dominating this expat market, would you do anything different when you started now that you look back on it? How would you develop this kind of business today if you knew what you knew today then?
Well, that's a hard question to answer because things have changed over the years. So for example, when I started, there weren't all these regulations that make it difficult for the U.S. custodial firms and brokerage firms to deal with expats. So when I started, everybody was dealing with expats. It was no different from dealing with Americans in the U.S. You know, Merrill Lynch had expat clients and so on. And then along came some regulations like FATCA, Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. And these companies started getting out of the business. So things have changed over time. But it's a lot easier, actually, you know, somebody's interested in this space to get into it now because of these regulations and because there are so few American firms dealing with expats. What would I do differently? I think what I would do differently is I wouldn't try to build the business from the U.S. It's far easier to build it from abroad, a place like, say, France, and get licensed in France, and you're one of the few American expat advisors, but you're actually in France. And we're finding this in Spain because we started the business there, and you know, people are kind of flocking to it because we're the only people who have an office in Spain that are dealing with U.S. expats. So probably the one big difference that I would make is to start this business from abroad, but still to have a U.S. license. You still want to have an SEC license as a foreign advisor so that you can, you know, deal with the U.S. custodians and all that.
So you might start out in Spain or France and then work the expat market there.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the way I'd do it. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Do you still see a lot of expats in San Francisco? People who are Europeans over in America. Do you work with some of them?
Not so much. We don't really market to those people because once they've moved here, if they're living here on a permanent basis, then they can deal with any advisory firm here. You know, they don't have to be an American citizen, but if they're a permanent resident, then they can open an account anywhere. It's not really our client base. Our client base is really Americans living abroad. I mean, obviously, some of our clients have moved back, and so we do have clients in the States, but it's not really the client base that we market to.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, you do some British pension work as well, investment management in Britain, and you work in pounds and euros?
Well, we actually don't do that anymore. So there's a period of time when we were doing that for British people. When they have a pension account, which is kind of like our retirement accounts, they can move those accounts overseas. They can take them with them in some cases. And there used to be a sort of a brief opportunity of a few years, which happened to coincide with the financial crisis of 2008, where they could actually cash out these pensions. And a lot of people needed to do that at the time. So we kind of went into that business a little bit, but we don't really do that anymore. So nowadays I kind of refer that work to other firms that specialize in that.
Okay. So why did you decide not to? Just different business?
Just bandwidth. You know, we're getting so many clients for our mainstream business, if you like, that I didn't really have time to keep up with it. And I didn't have anybody who wanted to focus on that.
Well, you must have some interesting challenges when you work with an American expat. Do you have any examples of like a very interesting planning situation you got involved in that really showed the value of what you are able to do versus others?
Well, sure. So I can give you a recent example of a couple that moved from the U.S. to Spain for retirement. And they had a house in the U.S. that they were selling, and then they needed to get a visa in Spain. There are different visa categories they could get into. Each of the visa categories has a different tax treatment when you're there. They were also planning to be digital nomads, so they were going to work from Spain. One of them had a U.S. entity as her business. She was self-employed. So they moved to Spain, and the first issue was, well, what kind of a visa should you be on? And so we helped set them up with some of our contacts in Spain who dealt in visa, and they ended up with a visa that has some tax benefits for 10 years, for example. And then the other thing is selling the house. Well, what they did, and they actually contacted us when they were in the process, but it makes a big difference whether you sell your home before or after you become a Spanish tax resident. Because in the U.S., we get a $500,000 capital gains exclusion if you're married, but you don't necessarily get that in other countries. So in Spain, it would be a taxable event selling this house. So it was a good idea to sell the house before they moved, and that's something that they didn't know about. And then along the way, come things like, well, where do you invest your money? So their money was with Fidelity originally. Well, Fidelity doesn't deal with people in Spain. So we have to move their money we ended up moving it to Charles Schwab where we can manage it. And then currency transfers, you know, they're buying a place in Spain. And so they needed to buy it in euros. So how do you move the money in an efficient manner? If you do it through banks, you could lose a lot on the exchange rate. So we set them up, help them get a Wise account and did it that way and move their money around. So a number of things and things still come up, you know. Now they've been there, I think a year and a half or something like that. So things come up on the tax side. Like, for example, can they contribute to IRA accounts or SEP IRA? You need some taxable income in the U.S. to be able to do that. So things like that still come up that we can help them with.
Well, having done a lot of work overseas myself, I know that people operate differently over there. And a hot button in America is texting. And I know many expats and many foreigners use WhatsApp and not the other services, Google or whatever, in America. So how does that work? Are you able to navigate that U.S. regulation using other systems, or does WhatsApp interface with other U.S. systems?
Yeah, we try to avoid doing that for business. So we try to avoid messaging altogether for business. Okay. We will use email, we'll capture the emails, or if we need to do a call, we'll do a Zoom call and capture that. But we just generally avoid messaging with clients, at least when it comes to business issues altogether.
That'd be a good way to do it, I imagine, is to avoid it. Yeah. So interesting. Well, we're coming near the end of our time here. That was really fascinating to hear some of your stories here, Tom. So are there any other really interesting stories you'd like to tell us about your business that's different than other firms? Any story that you can share with?
Well, there's, I guess there are stories, but off the top of my head, you know, what I would say is that it's just a really rewarding thing. I think we all want to have a rewarding career, right? And many people get into our business because they want to deal with people and they want to do something that matters. And so if you are interested in that, and if you're interested in the expat experience, maybe you'd rather live somewhere for a while yourself, then we're looking for people to join our firm. But even if you want to do it on your own, I think it can be a very rewarding experience to move somewhere and to get started. And if somebody wants to do that, I'm happy to give them some free advice and on how they can do that. And I would encourage more people to do it because, like I say, there's 7 million U.S. expats out there and they're underserved, frankly.
Well, good. A good opportunity for you and any others that want to jump in, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. Yeah. And you know, I'm getting on a bit too, so we need some younger people in this business.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, that's great. Well, Tom, this is a really interesting discussion today. Usually we talk more about U.S. concerns and U.S. issues, and you really got a unique practice or a unique business. So congratulations on all that.
Well, thanks a lot, Brian, and thanks for the opportunity to be on your show. It was a great experience. Enjoyed chatting with you, and best of luck in what you do as well.
Thank you. We have a lot in common. We have lots of expats and other folks. So we'll probably be talking more in the future, Tom.
Sounds good, Brian. Nice talking to you.
Right. Well, thanks everybody for being with us. We've got a chance to talk with Tom, our special expat advisor. Very different business for most of us in the industry. So we learn from everyone and get some really great ideas. So thanks, Tom. And we appreciate you being with us on the Financial Advisors Workshop. Thanks, everybody. We'll leave it there today. We'll be back with another great interview, and we appreciate you joining us for the Financial Advisors Workshop.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the ideas shared here, please subscribe to the show and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and Spotify, and share this episode with anyone you think will also find value here. Please send us your follow-up questions at financialadvisorsworkshop.com. And while you're there, download our guide on how to find ultra-high net worth clients. And if you're a financial advisor looking for more freedom, higher margins, and better training, please set up a consultation to hear more about joining our team by going to 4starwealth.com/advisors. All right, thanks for listening. And until the next Financial Advisor Workshop, keep on growing, everyone.